Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
The following program is a pre-production of Mike Novak.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. He's a legendary, charismatic megafauna in his own mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Well, that's not exactly the way I had the show start in mind. Sometimes you're hitting the buttons and they cooperate, and sometimes you hit them and they don't. And I was going to put that, don't we need to have a, where did that disappear? See, I'm putting things in here and they're just disappearing even as I do it. All right, let's turn.
I don't know how you run the mothership over there.
Oh, whoops. I thought that would fade out. Okay, it didn't fade out. I was gonna play this too. Maybe we should play the legal ID.
That's a thought.
Your Sunday home for the Mike Novak Show.
That guy, yeah.
A smiley. Yep. The Beacon, mm-hmm. Ring of Fire, uh-huh. A family meeting, mm-hmm. And Out Chicago.
Sounds
this
familiar.
Is 820 AM WCPT Willow Springs.
The Beacon.
92.7 WCPT FM.
Are they on Sundays now?
92.5 WCPY DeKalb.
Nobody tells me nothing around here.
FM WCPQ Park.
What are those frequencies?
Forest, streaming online.
What's the frequency, Kenneth?
ProgressiveTalk.com. This is Chicago's only independent Progressive Talk station.
Yeah, yeah.
This is Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Okay, and then I play the funny thing, and then we play. I'll see now. This is all messed up again. What the heck? See, now it's this other thing's disappeared on me. This is lovely. This is just lovely. Okay. Hey, good morning.
Good morning. But the
thing is, you brought the apple something.
Fresh apple crisp with fresh homemade whipped cream.
Wow.
Which really is, you know,
goody
cream with blender.
Wow.
Thank you.
How cool is that? Well, thank you. We appreciate that. You know, I can't eat it, though, until...
After the show.
Probably 11. Well...
I'll have it all ready for you.
You know, maybe I'll just sit here and snack on it for a while.
You give me a thumbs up and I'll go...
Yeah, we'll run the show.
Oh, where... Oh, wait.
We'll run the show.
Is it in the kitchen?
Breakfast.
Yeah, I can go get it.
You didn't bring it in here?
Well, no, because we don't normally eat on the air.
Yeah, but other people eat on the air. I'm the only one who doesn't. You guys are usually chowing down.
But Denny scolded me one time, told me it was unprofessional, so I only
Carol,
did it
you're,
once.
Well, it is unprofessional, but it doesn't stop anybody in the business from doing it.
Carol,
what were you going to say there?
I was just going to say a simple rule of thumb, what people don't know doesn't hurt them.
Exactly. We don't have cameras here.
These microphones turn on and off.
It's not like those fancy shows. We're old school here.
But Mike and Lisa and Sarah, if we tell them about it, then they will know. So what are we doing?
Well, that's the other thing is that you have, Ron Cowgill always busts me because I'm too transparent about what's going on around here. He says, where's the magic? Where's the magic? You know, you can't. Speaking of Ron Cowgill, I have to say that I may be giving him a holler this morning.
Uh-oh. That always sounds to me like there's trouble in the Novak house.
We were talking, Carol Brewer and I were talking about home ownership. What a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. It's got its ups and downs, and I guess this weekend it has downs.
Oh, well, it's not just this weekend. Let me start with Monday, okay? Let me start with Monday. What a week we've had.
All right.
What an interesting week. On Monday, which was the coldest day in the last, what, 25 years, 20 years, whatever.
Colder than
maybe 30 years.
Colder than the Antarctica, I believe.
No, it wasn't colder than
it was colder than it was
Antarctica.
It was colder than Antarctica.
Not everywhere in Antarctica. I don't believe that. I don't believe it for a second.
We'll have to look.
We'll have to ask our buddy. Rick.
Ask Rick DeMaio at 9:45.
A little homework, although I'm sure
I don't believe. I just don't believe.
I heard that same headline, Carol.
Well, the other headline you heard was that the Emerald Ash Borer had been killed off by the cold, which was all over the place this week. And guess what? We're going to talk about that on the show today.
I'm excited about that conversation.
At around sometime after 10:30, I've got Dr. Frederick Miller from Joliet Junior College, entomologist. He's been on the show before. He taught me my entomology course when I was studying to be a master gardener. And I called him yesterday and I said, okay, what's this stuff about EAB and cold weather? Is it, you know, I've seen all these headlines and there was a debate we were having on Facebook about it. And I took the, surprisingly, the negative view, and said, no, don't start planting ash trees because I can't believe that this is going to just wipe out EAB or even knock them back significantly. So he's going to be, and I'm not going to tell you what he told me yesterday on the phone. I'm going to make you wait till the end of the show to find out, at least the last half hour of the show, when Dr. Frederick Miller talks about Emerald Ash Borer and the cold weather we had last week. Let me just get out of the way the rest of the show before I do a quick rant. In the green room with Mike, and we have a new introduction for, see, I put that in here too, and that disappeared. What is going on? All right. Just nothing is here. Nothing is where it's supposed to be. But we can put that in. We have the technology.
And you have someone standing over your shoulder.
Yeah, I know. He probably heard what was going on and says, Novak, you're not doing anything right. Denny, it's okay. I don't know what happened at the top of the show. I saved the thing, but it didn't play what I'd saved. But who cares? Who cares? It's just the show open. It's just, you know, the way you introduce people to what you're doing and try to suck them in for 2 hours. And who cares if it just sort of crumbles into nothingness? That's fine. It's really. There's these people in showbiz, in radio, who say the first 30 seconds is the most crucial. If you don't get your people in the first 30 seconds, you're done.
Huh. Dun, dun, dun.
That's right.
I'm not sure that applies at 9 a.m. on a Sunday morning.
I don't think so either. I think most people are just kind of rolling out of the sack going, what? What did he say? Mm-hmm. What? I miss that. So anyway, in the green room, we have a new intro that Denny put together for us.
I can't wait to hear it.
It's short and sweet. Joey and Holly Baird, who are with the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener, and I have to give a shout out to Annie Haven in California, who she kind of helped set this whole thing up. So I just saw that she had posted that she's listening, and I'm glad she is. And I know why she's listening. And that's because the Weekend Gardener with Nikki Jabour is not currently on the air. So she's listening to my show.
No, she listens.
The Weekend Gardener with Nikki Jabour out in Nova Scotia. Because Nova Scotia, you think we're cold here. Huh. So anyway, Joey and Holly will be with us. They're out of Wisconsin. They do a lot of videos. We'll talk about their how-to videos. And a lot of you out there who are gardeners could stand to watch a few of these and learn about doing stuff. So they're on in the green room with Mike. In the 10 o'clock hour, Robert Neville, the wonderful, wonderful Robert Neville from KAM Isaiah Israel, a congregation on the south side across the street from Barack Obama's Chicago home. They are hosting their fifth annual Martin Luther King Food Justice and Sustainability Weekend, January 17th to 19th. That's next weekend. Sarah Batka is going to be one of the participants. How about that? You're a fancy person, aren't you?
Yeah.
Fancy schmancy.
Yep.
Going down to KAM, and it's a wonderful thing. And then Dr. Frederick Miller, as I said, professor in the Department of Agriculture and Horticultural Sciences at Joliet Junior College. Did Emerald Ash Borer survive the polar vortex? And yes, polar vortex is a real thing. And yes, it didn't get made.
How silly was that?
It's always silly. Look, everything that comes out of Fox is stupid. It's ridiculous. It's just, and those people.
Well, I think that was a big Rush. Limbaugh.
Oh, was that a Rush thing?
That was a big Rush Limbaugh. These people are inventing new words.
And the difference is?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. So they just, you know, just anything that you can put a negative spin on. So anyway, before we get to the in the green room. So Monday, minus 15 degrees. I decided to take my own advice. I'm going out and I'm going to experience this outside.
I did the same because you told us to.
So I went out for a couple hours and really it wasn't that bad. But as Rick DeMille says, it's cumulative. You know, it adds up after a while. But if you're out there
for a couple of hours.
Well, not outside for a couple of hours. I ran some errands and just was like seeing who's out there and who's doing what. Went to the diner and had breakfast, you know, that kind of thing. All right. I get home. Basement door is wide open. The basement door to my basement with the plants I'm storing for the winter, which I overwinter usually, I don't know, half a dozen plants down there, including my 6 foot tall Schefflera, my 5 foot tall hibiscus, my 7 foot tall, probably six or seven foot tall grapefruit plant.
Is it heated down there?
Yes.
Okay.
Not that day. Not with the door open.
Why was the door open?
I don't know.
Gotta.
No, my cat would not do that. She's smart, but not that smart.
She wanted to invite her friends inside.
Yeah, that's right. Come on in. No, the door was open.
Oh, no.
And I don't know if it had been open for 2 hours or for 12.
Well, lucky you found it. You could have had frozen pipes down there.
You're right.
I mean, the plants are tragic in and of itself, but boy, had you not known,
maybe
24
that's why
hours of that could have been broken pipes.
You know, you're right. I hadn't thought about that. All right, so the plants.
I'll paint a silver lining on your black light.
The plants are toast, basically. Okay, the plants are toast.
I'm sorry to hear that.
So this morning, you know, and oh, by the way, so I slammed the door and I insulated and I got blah, 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 and that door's getting fixed, and that's why Ron Coggill is going to get a call. And this morning, I'm walking out the door, and, you know, it rained the other night, and I thought, oh, we've had issues with flooding in the basement, and I thought, you know, it's not that bad. I'll check it when I can check it. And I walk out the door this morning, getting ready to head over here, and I look, and I see there's a little drain just outside the basement, and there's standing water in it, and I went, oh, that's not good. Because it's higher than the basement. And I open the door, and there's 4 inches of standing water in the basement.
Again.
And it's there right now. So after the show, that's what I get to deal with. That's my Sunday.
Yeah, so we said some swear words.
We said some swear words before the show. And
I wonder what kind of, we need to put some kind of alarm system down in your basement. Surveillance cameras, some kind
something.
Of humidistat.
You know what we need to do?
I need to rent.
I need to rent. I need to go back to renting. This house owning is like 13 years into the mission. The jury's in. Renting is a lot more fun.
On Monday, my radiator was streaming water.
I saw that. You posted the photos of it on Facebook.
Yeah, that was fun.
So this is what, but you're a renter.
No, I'm an owner.
Oh, that's right.
I own
yours
condo.
Is a condo.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. All right.
Sadly, I'm condo board president, so I can't pawn these problems on to anybody because, of course, I go down, I'm checking the PSI on the steam radiator and I'm doing all this stuff and I skim it and my neighbors are looking at me going, PS what? This is why you're in charge, because I know how a boiler works.
And I don't even have boots that are waterproof.
Oh, dear.
So I can't even go into my basement to see how far in all the trouble is. And it looks like it's the whole basement, because I got to get in, turn some lights on down there.
You don't have any cords on the floor or anything, right?
I hope not. I don't know. What do I know? I'm just a homeowner. It's a basement. You throw stuff into your basement.
Right.
Like your plants that you think are safe.
We're going to get you some. I've got 5 gallon buckets. We're going to string them to your feet like romper rooms. We'll have you trot through the basement looking for electrical cords, and then you can get your feet wet.
So the day I was going to, you know, watch a little football, a little, you know, playoff football and just take it easy.
Well, if last night's game was any indication, there's not much football left to watch.
Both games yesterday were just awful. So anyway, so we need to get to In the Green Room with Mike, and I hope you take this as a cautionary tale about what could happen if you own a home, if you're thinking of buying a home. Don't. That's all I got to say. All right, it's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We will be back with our segment right after this. Uh-oh. Wait, I thought, oh, let's try this one then.
If you've ever filed a lawsuit, you know that it can be stressful, even traumatic. And if you've been exposed to asbestos, silica dust, or other lung toxins, you're going to need a law firm that can guide you through the legal maze efficiently and effectively. The attorneys of Penn Rakowski are exactly who you're looking for. They view each client and their needs as unique. They're focused on one thing and one thing only, lung disease. And they're based right here in Illinois and Wisconsin. The lawyers at Penn Rakowski have been representing individuals suffering from lung disease and their families for a combined 35 years. And because they're local, they can come to you. They've successfully represented asbestos workers, electricians, carpenters, machinists, and others throughout both states. Contact Penn Rakowski at dustlaw.com or call them toll free at 888-LUNG-LAW. That's 888-586-4529. Penn Rakowski, local, committed, caring.
And I want to welcome Penn Rakowski to the show. Very happy to have them on board. Stephen Rakowski actually has been on this program talking about silica dust issues. We just got to talking and he said, you know, let's make it official. And I'm happy to have them, and I hope that you will take advantage of this because, you know, they handle asbestos cases, they handle silicosis. And it brings me to an email that I got just yesterday from Ashley Williams. And she writes about an update concerning the upcoming Utica, Illinois, in LaSalle County public hearing. A leading expert in the studies of frac sand and the dangers of silica dust, you know, speaking of Penn Rakowski, Dr. Crispin Pierce will be speaking at the hearing for the proposed Ansell mine in North Utica. Dr. Pierce is a professor of environmental public health at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. In addition, Dr. Pierce's colleague, Dr. Ron Koshishek, Emeritus Professor of Ethics from UW-Eau Claire, and Citizen Advocate will be speaking at the hearing. It is this Wednesday, 6 p.m., January 15th, at the Grand Bear Lodge in Utica. I've got some information here. I'll hand to you guys that you can tweet and post on Facebook. But it's this Wednesday, 6 p.m., Dr. Crispin Pierce speaking about frack sand and the dangers of silica dust as the whole county of LaSalle continues to be for sale to mining interests. And I think people might want to go out there and hear that. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Well, we're having a good old-fashioned cold and snowy winter so far, so this is a good time to get your trees pruned. One of the reasons is that winter pruning can slow the spread of diseases such as Dutch elm disease and oak wilt and even an infestation of emerald ash borer. That's because the tree is dormant and less likely to produce running sap that attracts disease-carrying insects. In addition, pruning can also help reduce snow and ice damage to trees that are prone to this kind of damage. Birches, for instance, can be devastated by snow and ice if not pruned on a regular basis to help improve their structure. And once the ground is frozen, it's easier for tree crews to get close to your trees without compacting the soil around them. Talk to a certified arborist at the Care of Trees about all of this. If you have any questions, call 800-508-9466 for a free, and I said free, consultation. 800-508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. Thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees is a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it. You make it work for you.
That's it. That's my intro.
It happened so fast.
I know. It did go so.
Can you play it again, please?
I wonder if I can get that here. All right, let's try that again.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it. You make it work for you.
I love it. Okay, that was my roommate's voice.
Is that your...
That was Chris.
Really?
No.
The second one.
Life's no.
A, no?
No, it's not.
Really?
No.
Oh, gosh. No, that really was thought it was his voice.
That was David Spade.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. That's what Denny told me. All right, let's go to the phone lines, and let's bring in Joey and Holly Bear. Joey and Holly, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you guys doing in Wisconsin today?
Doing very well.
Doing well, thank you.
You know, I guess I we owe this, I mentioned it earlier, in part to our buddy Annie Haven out in California. Let's give her a ding there. And her Moopoo tea, which I understand you guys are big fans of.
Yeah, most definitely. It's definitely a great product to use, and it's really easy to use as well. You don't have to, a lot of times when you're making a compost tea or whatever, you have to buy all sorts of equipment, and with this, all you need is a bucket or
bucket.
Anything, really. Yeah. I mean, any sort of water-holding container, you just put the tea bag in there and for 24 hours or whatever, and it does its thing, and you're good to go.
And it's antibacterial, hormone-free, antibiotic, hormone-free manure from her GMO-free cattle, so that's why the plants love it so much.
That's great. So let's get to you guys. You've been putting videos together since, what, 2010 or thereabouts?
Yeah, something like that.
Yes.
And, why? What got you started doing this?
Well, we started a Facebook page. It was called Wisconsin Vegetable Gardeners, where we provided information to people about vegetable gardening. And I incidentally won this camera from the place I was working. And Joey said, what are we going to do with this? And I was like, well, we should make some gardening videos, because people were always, you know, we could show them pictures, we could give them links to stuff. You know, we could find different information, but it wasn't as hands-on as us actually doing the video. And it just kind of grew from there.
You know, that's always the best way to start. You win a camera. You win a prize. And then you start your business based on a prize you won. That's a good way to get going. So what – I know that you guys know a lot of stuff about gardening. Would you also call it farming, or is it just you? How do you characterize what you do?
Some people call us urban farmers, so I guess you could say that. We do have quite a bit of garden that we do tend to, so it's not just a 4x8 plot or anything like that.
We're at three different locations on three different properties. Sister-in-law, my Holly's sister, Holly's mother, our front yard. So we have different areas about 10 miles apart from each other. So one may get rain and the other may not, so we can really see how plants react to different environmental acts on that.
Uh-huh. And do you consider yourself, when you offer these bits of advice, are you gearing them towards people in Wisconsin or to the Midwest in general or to the whole country?
Well, it's a little bit of everything. Some of our information applies to Wisconsin, but a lot of the information is universal, whether you live in Chicago or Los Angeles or Sydney, Australia. The information is universal and can be applied to any backyard garden.
And what are you telling people right now as we roll into 2014? What is on your radar screen?
Well, we just started our onion seeds for the spring.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw the video. I watched the video just yesterday, and it's some terrific advice on there. And what would you tell people about planting onions? I know you talked about, okay, let's start with a real simple one, because it's something that Joey talks about in the video, which is a long day, intermediate, and short day onions. Let's describe these to people so they know which ones they're getting for what part of the country.
Well, if you live in the South, you want short day because during the summer you have a shorter period of daylight.
And you typically grow onions in the South during the winter portions because it's cooler. In the intermediate portion, which is about San Francisco to Washington, D.C., and that belt line there, you're going to grow intermediate, and you can grow them at this time. You can start them now and grow them through the summer. And in the North, here in Wisconsin, in that area of the United States, you want to grow long-day onions because as you get closer to the poles, the light of the earth varies, and during the summer months, we actually have more light than the southern part of the United States, and we want to benefit from that. And the difference between these long-day, short-day onions, they will start for, let's go with Blondes, because that's where we live. Blonde onions, they'll put a lot of top growth on until the daylight gets between 14 and 16 hours. And magically, by the magic of Mother Nature, they'll stop putting top growth on and begin putting bulb growth on. Now, let's say you grab the wrong onions. You bought them online, you grabbed the wrong onions, and you got short day onions, and you try to grow them in Wisconsin. They will grow, but they're going to put a lot of top growth on, but no bulb growth, because they don't have that magic of nature knowing it's time to put bulb growth on because the sunlight's too long up here. Now, wherever you buy them at your local home and garden center, they're going to have the appropriate kind of onions. They're not going to give you short-day onions in Milwaukee, or they're not going to give you long-day onions in Tampa. The buyers make sure that doesn't happen. But if you buy online, you want to be very sure and do your research on those type of varieties so you get what will grow accordingly to where you live, because there's no more disappointment than trying to grow onions and realize at the end of the season you've got the wrong variety of onions, and now you have no onions. You got to go buy them.
Well, you don't have the bulbs, but you would still have the greens, right?
Right. Which is hard. It's hard to make onion rings with chives, but yeah.
You're absolutely right. Now, what about those? And I'm kind of fascinated by the idea that people say in Springfield, Illinois, who are on the border between intermediate and long day, how do they choose?
Well, if you're on the border there, you can actually grow pretty much both of them. But the recommendations, what if you're kind of closer to long day, the recommendation from the professionals or the experts, I guess, in gardening, and we've done a lot of research on this, go ahead and go with whatever variety is closest to you. If you're in Springfield, go with long day onions, because you're closer to and you're going to have more sunlight than a lot of the intermediate areas of the United States in that grouping.
We are talking to Joey and Holly Baird from the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener. By the way, if you want to go to their website, you can go to thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. You guys also have, of course, the Facebook page, which is slightly different name, right?
Yes, yeah. It's Wisconsin Vegetable Gardeners.
Right, it's Wisconsin Vegetable Gardeners. It doesn't have the on the front, and it has an S on the end. But, you know, if you type in Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener, I'm pretty sure that you'll find the Facebook page. Now, in the time you've been doing, how many videos do you figure you've done now?
We've been right at 300 right now.
Oh, holy smoke. wow, that's a lot of videos. That's a lot of taping. What... in doing this, I'm not going to ask you what you learned about videotaping because nobody cares. but I'm going to ask you what you learned about gardening in doing this, because you guys were already good at this. You were already kind of professionals at this. What surprised you in putting some of these videos together, do you think?
Just even learning about when we do a video, if we're going to talk about long day, short day, we spend literally hours doing research and going through different websites and making sure the information that we provide is accurate, and it's not just throwing the camera on and talking about what we think might be the right answer. And there's a lot of information, and I don't want to, scare people away that if they ever garden, oh, I've got to do a lot of research. No, but there's a lot of things that, you can plant onions and they'll grow, but there's a lot of detailed things that you can do to enhance your chances of getting good sized onions, or putting them in the right spot in the garden, the right kind of soil conditions, the right type of fertilizer to use for them. It's fun to do that type of research and learn what you thought you knew is correct, but there's so much more additional information that applies to each type of vegetable or fruit that you're growing.
And one thing I've learned is that the University Extension website tend to have the best information around here. We look at the University of Wisconsin Extension websites, or even, large plant providers. They have a lot of good information as well, like Bonnie Plants. They have a lot of good information on their website as well. There's a lot of, I guess, junk out there. And if you contact, like I said, your local University Extension, their website, it'll have the best information. I learned a lot about canning. I had never canned before I had met Joey. I'm a city girl. I grew up in Milwaukee. And I ended up taking some classes through our local rec department and just learning all sorts of different things about canning, which is definitely something that I think a lot of people should do, but it's definitely a very specific scientific process.
Well, yeah, there's science to it, there's skill to it. There's local knowledge to it. There, and by the way, let's back up just a second, because Sarah Batka, who's on the team here, works for Illinois Extension. She is the Chicago Master Gardener Coordinator. And when you were talking, Joey, about vetting the information you put out on your videos, she was just nodding furiously. I think her headphones were going to fall off. She kept nodding about that. And you want to say a couple of words there, Sarah?
Thank you so much, Holly, for just, you know, testifying that we really do have non-biased research-based information. So thank you so much.
I think that's important. And the point you made is something that I deal with all the time. Folks will shoot me an email and they'll say, hey, what's the story on this, this, or this? And sometimes it's three or four questions, and sometimes I go, uh-oh, because it means now I'm going to be researching it, because I refuse to send out anything here that I haven't looked over and gone to the extension websites and gotten the best information from. And I don't think people understand that people like you, Joel and Holly and Sarah and I work hard to make sure we're getting out good information. And even on the air, it's one of the reasons I just kind of hate speaking off the top of my head without having something in front of me, because I want to make sure I get it right. And I think we all have that goal in mind. Go ahead, Holly.
But and because there may be that one person that may watch that one video and never watch anything else that you have ever done, and you want to make sure they have the right information, so when they go to the garden, whether they ever watch your videos again, they can realize that the information they got from you was accurate and it did produce that vegetable or that fruit that they were growing.
The other thing I like about what you're doing is you are advocating that people reuse stuff around the house and around the yard for your gardening. Explain some of the ways that you've done that.
Well, one of the ways that we are doing it in the grow room is we use 9-ounce plastic cups or the solo cups that a lot of people like to party with. They work really well with starting seeds, tomatoes, peppers, whatever the case may be. And also a nice way of storing them in your grow room is using metal cupcake tins. They fit perfectly in metal cupcake tins, and they don't flop all over the place. So if you're going to yard sales, thrift stores, Goodwill, cupcake tins are the way to go whenever you're starting seeds in solo red cups or blue cups or whatever color you favor in that area.
And that's a really good point. I want to make sure people aren't confused, though, that they're not putting the soil into the cupcake holders. They're putting the cups with the soil into the cupcake holder. And that way you've got a tray that you can use to carry those things around and to move them around. And some of the other stuff I know that you guys work on, obviously, Holly introduced you as urban gardeners, which makes sense. What, you're in the suburbs of Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You talk about in your videos self-sufficiency, GMO versus non-GMO, container gardening, traditional ground gardening, backyard gardening, canning, as you mentioned, homesteading, freedom to grow your own food, composting, organic versus non-organic, prepping, growing in small areas, growing indoors, and apartment and condo gardening. Lisa, you should You should.
I'm loving their website. I'm just digging around.
What do you advise people in apartment and condos to do?
I would definitely say look into growing things that you can trellis and grow up. Such as vine plants like cucumbers, zucchini,
pole
beans, things like that, because you can grow up instead of growing out. And then also just, you know, there's a lot of different container variety plants that you can purchase now, such as bush tomato plants, bush cucumber plants, and those are things that stay more contained. And definitely don't be afraid to think about, you know, where you can kind of be creative. Can you get like a window box or something that goes on your railing, or even if you have like a fire escape that maybe you can use a portion of it, something like that.
You know, I have to agree with you about some of the bush varieties, like in terms of beans. It's so much easier to grow, even in a regular garden, even if you've got space. I like the bush varieties simply because they seem to be a little more manageable. What about, how do you describe to people organic versus non-organic gardening? What do you tell them?
Basically, it's chemical free. You're not adding anything that is, if you look at the ingredients, if you look at what you're adding to your soil, to your plants, it's going to, you know, say organic, it's going to say realistic. It's not going to have, when you read the chemical list, you're not going to see something like formaldehyde in the ingredients.
Yeah, but how, but a lot of, that, oh, go ahead, sorry.
Fertilizers that have formaldehyde in them. Yeah.
Shocking. So, yeah, so you want to definitely look, it's OMRI listed. If that's on your package, that's a good sign. It'll say organic. It'll have, you know, like I said, it'll say organic. It'll be clear to you that you're using that organic fertilizer as opposed to adding the chemicals to your garden, to your soil, to your hard work.
Joey, I talked over you a little bit there. What was this about formaldehyde?
Formaldehyde, there are fertilizers that are derived from formaldehyde. Now, you know what formaldehyde is. They use that for embalming dead bodies. Do you really want to put that around the plants that you're going to eat?
I got a couple of plants that I could use it right now because I killed them this week, but... oh dear. But the thing about chemicals is I think that chemicals is saying the word chemical, that's kind of a broad term. And you know, getting people to understand what's in the products they buy is really important, which means they have to read the labels. And I think a lot of folks don't read the label. I think the only thing they read on the label is makes my plant grow. Grow seven times, you know, bigger. They buy the marketing, and they don't really pay attention to the details. Do you find that as well?
Very, very much so. Yes, it's basically a crack for plants.
Right.
It gives them a great energy boost, but then you've got to keep pouring that chemical on that plant for it to keep growing. Otherwise, it dies because it's like crack. You need it to survive.
I assume you're talking about synthetic fertilizers.
Yeah,
right. And we've watched people, you know, at the local home and garden center, they come in and they're like, okay, my tomatoes are doing this, and they just grab whatever says helps tomatoes grow. They don't even pay attention. They just, oh, that's the first thing I see. I like the price. Out the door I go. And I'm just like, you know, there's so many other ways you can help your tomatoes grow without giving them, you know, the plant crack.
The plant crack. I think you've just coined a new phrase here. I think I'm going to use that on the show. The plant crack. Don't use the plant crack. Well, listen, you guys are going to be at the Wisconsin Garden Expo in Madison on February 7th and 8th. What are you going to be presenting there?
We're going to be talking about how to grow the best tomatoes.
Speaking of plant crack.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to show you how to do it the organic way and with some products you already probably have in your kitchen to help your plants grow even better.
That sounds terrific. That information you can find if you go to, and I've got the link. I've got the links to everything on my my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show. I have the link to Joey and Holly and the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener. I even have the link to the Wisconsin Garden Expo, which is Y Garden Expo, WIGardenExpo.com. You can even write to the folks at the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener. It's the WI Veg Gardener. Well, okay. WIVEGGARDENER@gmail.com. But that link is up on my website in case you want to use it. I have the link to the YouTube page. You should take a look and see everything they're doing. It's a pleasure talking to you guys.
Very nice. Talk to you.
And keep me posted on what you're up to there, and we should visit again.
Absolutely.
Well, definitely. Thank you.
All right. Well, have a great Sunday and a great year, and I hope people stop by the Wisconsin Garden Expo to see you guys, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let me give also a real quick plug to, I mentioned Annie Haven earlier. And as I said, she's one of the sponsors of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener. And just so you know, if you want to try her manure tea, it's at manuretea.com, M-A-N-U-R-E-T-E-A.
That is on the Facebook page.
And she's teasing us on Twitter, saying it's going to be 70 degrees.
In California today?
She was my favorite listener, but slide quickly.
Annie, do you have a water pump that I can borrow this afternoon to pump out my basement? That would be really nice. I got a feeling Cowgill is going to end up tweeting me at some point or sending a message about that. Okay. Oh, and then at the end of the segment, we play this.
In the green room.
You dig.
It feels so much more final now.
I know.
It's like you got to have the chapter.
That's, you know, when you tell Denny, make it short and sweet.
It needs little direction.
He does it exactly the way you want it. Here it goes.
In the green room.
You dig.
Well, now we know.
Now we know.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I don't want you to be left out. Here's what I'm talking about. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakening Chicago to improve their lives than any other health or wellness magazine. If you're a green, natural health, or wellness business, you should be part of the leading sustainability resource in the country. Natural Awakenings is packed with information that our readers use to find the products and services they need to live happier, healthier lives. Natural Awakenings is available for free each month throughout the city and north and northwest suburbs. We're placed in more than 1,100 area locations, ensuring the right eyes read about your products and services. We're also online at nachicagonorth.com. We're local, we're independent, and our readers will help you grow your business. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
While I'm sitting here, I'm looking at our tweets, and I got one from Zan. She says she's listening to Mike now while doing this, and then she puts up a link to something called apartment therapy. Is that what that is? Yep, apartment therapy. Weekend chores, flowers, kitchen organizing and cleaning, make a meal. My weekend chore, get the pump. Get the hose, get the pump.
Shouldn't that be a spring chore, Mike?
Pump out the basement.
It's not a January activity.
It's not supposed to be
a January activity.
And then we also got a tweet from the Seed Keeper Company. Love the gals at the Seed Keeper Company. And they write, you see, I'm plugging everybody today. I'm just feeling really generous. They write, our burlap girdles are lightweight and great to grow in, perfect for balcony veggie gardens, in line with the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener. So you can go to the Seed Keeper Company if you're interested in that. And their website is www.seedkeepercompany.com. Oh, I forgot to mention to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardeners. And it brings it to mind because I look at the Seed Keeper Company and all the followers they have. We're hurting for new likes. I find if I don't beg for them on the air, I don't get them. So we need some likes on the Facebook page. And I'm hoping that the people who have liked the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener, because they got a lot of them, will send a few our way. And the Seed Keeper, wonderful Seed Keeper gals, if they will send some likes our way. We just, you know, like I said, if I don't shill for them, I really don't get them. So that's what I'm letting people know that they can do. Now, ever have one of those aha moments about 6 months too late? That just happened to me as I perused the pages of the January-February issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. This is the Ideas issue for 2014, a way to get you thinking about the coming growing season. For me, the aha occurred when I saw an article titled Unusual Edibles. Numero uno in the story was something called peanuts. In the magazine,
They tell you how to grow them on purpose. But what if a peanut plant shows up in your community garden unannounced? That happened to us last year. There was this plant. It just popped up. I said, looks like a legume. I was correct in that regard. And so I just let it grow. And I told the folks, don't rip this out. I'm not sure what it is. It looks interesting. Let's let it grow for a while. And then suddenly it was sprouting peanuts. And we figured some squirrel had left us a present, which germinated and then grew enough to give us peanuts. I mean, how strange is that? Now, it makes me wish I had seen the magazine article 6 months earlier. And of course, that the article talks about that and other unusual edibles like ginger, garlic, which isn't really that unusual, sunchokes, sometimes known as Jerusalem artichokes, ramps, which I understand are really cool, and long beans. If you're in the mood for something exotic this year, this growing season, this edible growing season, pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Of course, there's my column on the inside back page of every issue. Most people who read that have what they call an oh no moment. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Better yet, get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. Rick DeMeyer weather in 60 seconds.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
This is what I feel like this morning. It's like, with everything going on, let's bring in Rick DeMaio, who you should know it. I was Annie Haven, who writes to us. She said, thanks for the shout out. And she said it's 70s in California, but worst drought in recorded California history. I was not aware of that right now. Have you been following that, Rick DeMaio?
Oh, absolutely, Mike. There's very little snow in the Sierra Mountains. And in fact, there hasn't really been a big snow event. If you draw a line from about, say, Oregon, the Oregon-California line through Nevada into, we'll say, the Salt Lake City area, and across much of Colorado, they've been basically without a snow event for probably about 6 weeks. And it kind of coincides with the fact that the core of the Arctic air has basically been across the northern plains into the Midwest and into the western Ohio Valley. In fact, if you were watching any of the football games yesterday, it was in the upper 50s in New England. And, you know, here we are talking about the coldest weather out of the four games was actually in Seattle, where it was raining in 47. It's going to be in the mid-50s today in Denver, and it's going to be in the 60s today in Carolina, North Carolina, where the other football game is being played. So it's all about how patterns set up and how they remain somewhat stable, and typically that goes on for about 4 weeks, and they kind of they kind of flip around a little bit, and then they go back to where they are, and then they flip around a little bit, they go back to where they are. And this pattern actually started the end of November just to the north and west of us and kind of dug its heels in and drifted a little bit south, and snow cover has a huge part to it. And here we are with a couple of mild days, and we'll get right back into cold weather, but not as frigid as we've had in the past. So, yeah, the weather that's been going on in California and part of the Rocky Mountains is definitely attributed to the pattern that we've had here in the Midwest.
All right, let's talk about that pattern. And I know you don't, you know, you can't go on for, you could go on for this probably 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah, lots of different ways you can relate to how it happened and why it happened.
Yeah, well, personally, what?
I can give you the cliff notes.
I want the cliff notes, but the chief cliff note I want for those climate change deniers and the idiots out there who are saying, well, we can't possibly have global warming because it's really, really cold.
You know what I loved, though? They got pounced on immediately. Like, no one, like, just boom, boom, boom. It just felt like they were all getting.
Yeah, but they're immune
back
to that. I mean, they're in their bubble, so they don't hear it anyway, and they just throw that stuff out there.
Well, I think they're hoping to. Well, they're probably paid to say those things. But they're hoping to be able to talk to the people who just have no idea.
But explain how the polar vortex plays into the whole. And again, you wouldn't say global warming. You never have on this show. To your credit, Rick, you always said climate variability, and that's what you've always said.
Variability, right? And the degree of variability directly relates to the degree of change, because I always say if you go up one, down one, the change is zero. If you go up 10, down 10, the change is zero. But the variability is huge. So you really got to look at how variable the pattern is. And there's, I think, a couple of ways to look at it. I don't want to go out and say that the weather that we've had recently is terrible for the environment. It's probably good for the environment because it's actually probably killed off a number of, you know, and you could probably go on this better than I can, Mike, some of the invasive species.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we get to tease the second hour where I'm going to have Dr. Frederick Miller on after 10:30 to talk about emerald ash borer and how this might have affected that insect and other insects.
Right, and I think in a positive way from a standpoint from what I've heard. But in any event, temperatures, believe it or not, across Fairbanks for the month of December into January so far, nearly 10 to 15 degrees above average. Temperatures over Greenland, about 5 to 10 degrees above average. So what we've done is the oceans towards the end of last summer into the fall were actually very, very warm across portions of the northern Pacific. And you heard me talk about the number of late-season typhoons that we had. And even though the oceans and the ocean temperatures in the Atlantic were above normal, they weren't way above normal. The reason why they didn't have much of a season there, but that pinch off of warmer air across the northern Pacific, which allowed these typhoons to actually drift as far north as they did, and they became somewhat what we call super typhoons or extratropical, that's when they kind of merge with the jet stream over the North Pacific into Alaska and down in the Pacific Northwest. Several of the storm systems that brought the early heavy season snow into the Rocky Mountains and our cold in October was directly related to those typhoons. So what we did is we developed this very early season pool of cold air over western Canada that never really left. It just sat there and sat there and sat there. And it's almost like once you get past a certain point, if you don't reduce the amount of cold air that's developing up in western Canada, similar to how you don't reduce the amount of warm air that develops over the South Central Plains in late May, you go, uh-oh, what does this mean? Does this mean that we're going to have an early start to a hot, humid summer? And it's those shoulder seasons, that late fall, that late spring, that really set you up. And I think the jury is out on how long this pattern is going to last. It's obviously relaxed a little bit, and there are signs that we're going to get cold again. But the core of the polar vortex, as we now talk about it, in such an affable way, has without a doubt reduced in size, reduced in intensity, and is kind of broken up a little bit. I kind of like to think of it as like an egg that's on a frying pan, and there's your polar vortex. And unless you take the pan and tilt it left or tilt it right and scramble it up with a fork, that's when it becomes somewhat discombobulated, and that's when the weather becomes very chaotic. And that's pretty much we're in right now. But that whole pattern that's set up took about 2 to 3 weeks to develop, and then it literally, unleashed 6 weeks of brutal brutal winter weather. Do you know so far, Mike, we've had 12 days where the temperature has been at or below zero. Last year up until this point, you don't know how many days we had below zero?
I'm guessing zero.
Yeah, zero. Zero. Yeah. 35 inches of snow last year up to this point.
Nailed it.
About an inch and a half.
Uh-huh.
When you go further north, the amount of snow is actually less. Rockford has had less snow. Madison has had less snow. Minneapolis. So we've been actually at the core of the snow. And then look what happened on Friday. We warmed up a little bit. The ground was frozen, and we had, you know, street flooding due to an inch of rain. It's amazing how much a little bit of something, when you're at the edge, I liken it to you're at the edge of the cliff, and if someone takes their finger and pokes you, you'll fall off. And that's what an inch of rain did on Friday. We had flooding and we had freezing conditions that I've never seen before. I've never seen freezing rain at 37 degrees.
You know, I don't know why I'm laughing about that. My basement has 4 inches of water right now, so there you go.
Yeah, a lot of things that you should have a whole segment is how did you survive the cold from last week? I think you get a lot of great calls.
You know, we probably would. I think that would be an excellent segment. So we got just a couple of minutes. I mean, I know that one of the things I'm reading is that the heat is tremendous in Australia and in the southern hemisphere, mm-hmm. while we're getting this crazy cold weather here. So climate variability is full tilt boogie right now, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And then again, I wish sometimes people would not say, well, it's snowing, therefore it doesn't happen. You have to look at the end results of what happens when you have all these different things happen out of whack, and then not so much at the world as any. We never say that. We just say it gives us a second chance to take a look at being conservatives in nature, because oftentimes you hear these things from conservatives in politics. I go, what's so wrong with being a conservative about nature and saying that in 150 years, the founding fathers of climate change put forth a proposition that we will keep the Earth and planet as good as we can keep it for the next 150 years. We talk so much about the founding fathers making things the way they are right now, and that's how we should do it. What's so wrong with doing that with Mother Nature and climate?
I don't think that's a bad idea. Yeah. Well, you've got to give us a forecast here.
Hey, real quickly, I was up at Glenview Park District cross-country skiing the other day, and I saw two beautiful coyotes tramping around. It was wonderful.
Oh,
cool.
Awesome.
It was great. 45 degrees sunny today, 35 cloudy skies, a couple of snow showers tomorrow, maybe an inch or two of snow on Tuesday with temperatures in the 20s, and then back to temperatures generally near normal for Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. But nothing in the way of any extreme cold.
Yay.
The pattern doesn't get real warm anytime soon.
I want it cold. I don't want any more water or snow melting and ending up in my basement, okay?
I don't know about that. I just clean out some of the snow around your house, and that'll probably reduce the flood.
I don't know. Okay, Rick DeMaio, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye. Second hour, Robert Neville from KAM Isaiah Israel on their MLK Justice Weekend. Stick around.
My shoes, my toes are busted. My kitchen says my bread is molded. I got a good job at the dollar store. 1 foot in the hole, 1 foot getting deeper with a broken mirror and a blown out speaker. And I ain't got much else to lose. I'm faded.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Oh, yeah. The bottom does drop out. And it ends up in my basement. Welcome back to... I'm Mr. Positive today. Mr. Positive on the airwaves on Chicago's Progressive Talk. As Tom Hartman is fond of saying, despair is not an option unless you're a homeowner. He lives in a houseboat, okay? So he doesn't have to worry about his basement flooding. It's already wet under there.
I almost did that in Hong Kong. I think it sounds great.
Live in a houseboat?
Yeah.
Why didn't you? I mean, you weren't going to be there the rest of your life. It would have been just for a short time.
I decided that cold, wet winters didn't sound that much fun. You don't have heat in most Hong Kong apartments.
And probably not in houseboats.
Definitely not in houseboats.
I mean, there's electricity, right?
Yeah, you are tethered to the dock. It seemed a little bit too transient to me because I wouldn't have owned the houseboat. It's kind of like your live-in security.
I don't understand. You think a houseboat sounds transient? I don't even get that.
All right. I love you, Lisa.
Lisa has had some very interesting...
A rodeo clown life. You should see my resume.
Welcome, Lisa Albrecht. Yeah, and you know, and you work in the solar industry. I mean, it just all comes together in the end. You know, indeed. you're working for the future of the planet, and you know, not
your path is your path that gets you where you are.
You know, I'm a firm believer in. I have to admit, I don't understand these kids in high school and college who have their lives mapped out for them. They know exactly what they're going to do. Usually they're the ones who become the politicians, because if you want to become a politician, you better start early.
Yeah.
Because you're already, you have to have a pristine life. You can't.
Well,
you
now
can't,
you can inhale, and it doesn't matter.
What?
Now you can inhale, at least in Colorado.
That's true. You can say it was legal in Colorado. You know, it would still probably stop you. I don't know. Although Barack Obama got away with that and mm-hmm. other stuff. But, you know, they start mapping these things out. Me, it's and I guess you, Lisa, and probably a few other people in this room, and there's some nods going on. Mr. Neville, you too?
Me too, what?
Well, I haven't finished the sentence. You're right. So very smart of you not to say yes until I finish the sentence. Our lives have come about almost randomly, and our paths. I would never have expected myself to be here doing in a gardening and environmental show 30 years ago. I thought I was going to be a movie star. I was never really going to be a movie star, but you know, when you're an actor, every actor thinks that they're going to end up being a movie star. Okay.
I was going to be an astronaut.
I'm sorry.
Instead, just living in a houseboat in Hong Kong.
I just snorted.
okay, let's change the subject.
Hey, but listen, if it could happen on The Big Bang Theory, it could happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
But that's what's so cool about not knowing right off the bat what you're. You know, what your life plan is. That's what
yeah,
I
Yeah, there you go.
And I'm just saying that because
see,
I'm
Mom?
In that scenario, too.
See, Mom?
It's called ad-libbing a life,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, it's great, yeah.
And I think most of us ad-lib our lives.
And you can create.
It's not likely I'd have known I've been sitting here 6 years ago that I'd be sitting here today talking about urban farming.
There you go. You were, at the time, just an architect, right?
Way
right.
to rein him in. It's a way to rein him in.
That's right. I'll keep going.
No,
if you let me, this will just go on forever and ever, and then you'll never get to speak. So, it's a pleasure to have Robert Neville again in the studio. He is the president of KAM Isaiah Israel Congregation, across the street from Barack Obama's Chicago home. How are the secret police? Tell me, what's your latest encounter with the secret police?
It's all quiet this time of year. I mean, we're not there very often. It's certainly not out in the garden this time of year. And
but they're still out there. They're out in their little SUV and waiting for people to walk down the street. And yeah. then they get out and very friendly, in a very friendly way, say,
They're a terrific group. But they've got their hands full during the height of the tourist season, that's for sure.
Yeah, and they must actually kind of like the snow because it's hard to get down there, right?
Yes, there's very little room for a snowplow to get through the barricades.
You know, something occurred to me, and I'm going to say it right now because I'll forget during our conversation, and it occurred to me this morning driving in here, which is when the Obamas are out of office and assuming they come back to live in their Chicago home, you've got to get Michelle to work in your garden. She would love KAM Isaiah Israel's
mission.
What?
Mission?
Mission? Well,
purpose?
Yeah, the mission, everything you've done. I mean, all you do, you take 10 minutes to explain it to her. She's like, I'm there.
You're not the first person to suggest that.
Oh, okay.
Darn. We'd certainly welcome her. It would be terrific. We can always, bless you, we can always use
it's from living in that houseboat.
That kind of expertise.
So. Yeah, you know, that it's true. I have a feeling that because what you've done is so remarkable, you and I are having this little argument about how many times you've been on the show. And I went back and looked yesterday, actually, to see. And my earliest the earliest record I have is 2010. So that would make it the fourth time, not the fifth. And because you started this in 2009.
We started growing in 2009, and
that wasn't
the first Martin Luther King weekend, Food Justice and Sustainability Weekend, was January of 2010.
Oh, really? So right. I have had you on since you.
Yes. So you are, as I have told you many times, you are one of the earliest supporters of our program. And really, a sine qua non. Without you, Mike, I'm not sure we'd be as far along as we are.
Don't you use those words on this program, okay? Nobody understands them, so.
Without which, nothing.
Thank you. That's much better.
Really, your audience.
I should have left it. It was such a wonderful compliment. Well, you guys deserve it. What you have done on the South Side, and you and I had a little conversation yesterday, you know, surprise, surprise. Sometimes I actually talk to my guests before they come on the show. I get the feeling that most radio people do not. They like to be surprised. I like to find out really what I want to talk about. And one of the things I said to you yesterday that I think is true is the word ecumenical really applies to KAM Isaiah Israel in the way you have gone out to touch congregations of all faiths and bring them into the idea of food justice, and which is why you have this weekend. And the weekend is getting more and more important. It's becoming a really big deal, not just in your congregation, but in Chicago and the Midwest. Perhaps the country. So let's talk about what you're going to do. It starts on Friday, and explain what we're going to have.
Well, on Friday night, we start out at 7:30 with a Shabbat service, a Sabbath service, and at 8 o'clock, the keynote address will be delivered by Martha C. Nussbaum, who's the Ernst Freund Distinguished Service Professor of Law and Ethics, the Department of Philosophy and the Law School at the University of Chicago.
She's who you and I want to be, basically, right?
Not possible at this point.
I know.
At any point.
Oh,
actually.
I know that. I mean, I gave up on school. After I got my BA, I said, done. Okay. See ya.
Yes, she's really without equal. And she'll be speaking on the new frontiers of justice beyond the social contract. And for me, what I hope is that she will look at what we have been doing with fresh eyes and really sort of in an odd way explain to us what in fact we have been doing in our relationship with the larger community.
Because you mean specifically KAM?
No, I think and the food justice program and our interfaith partners and this relationship between houses of worship and the larger community.
Let's stop there for a second and explain what you've done in the last 5 years with regard to other congregations in terms of your food justice program. You started out in 2009, as you said, ripping up, 1,000 square feet or more?
Roughly the first year.
And then you've added to it as you've gone along.
We now have approximately an eighth of an acre cultivated at three houses of worship. So we grow at KAM Isaiah Israel. And then about four blocks to the east at St. Paul and the Redeemer, and about four blocks to the north at Kenwood United Church of Christ. We also have helped congregations, one in northwest Indiana and one in St. Louis and one on the west coast in Los Angeles, help establish this kind of growing program. And so since 2009, we have grown and harvested and delivered over 12,000 pounds of food for those and delivered to those in need within a mile or so of where the food is grown. So about a little over 6 tons of food delivered to now seven different hot meal programs, as I say, within a mile or mile and a half of where the food's grown.
I want that to sink in, folks. 6 tons of food in about 5 years.
Well, it's interesting. It does sound like a good amount of food, but in fact, I often say it's really not all that much. But what it does demonstrate is the latent potential of an urban site. And so all this food has been grown on fairly tight urban sites that prior to being food-producing gardens, or what I call micro-farms, were just ornamental lawns.
Yeah, they were
lawns.
We've
talked about that before.
Yeah, the idea that you could take, and this is part of what we discussed yesterday, and something that I've believed in now for a number of years, I had my eyes open to this. You look at who has the potential to grow food in this country, I guess around the world, but specifically in this country. And it's the congregations of all faiths. Why? They have the resources. They usually have land. They have a congregation. They have people who know how to grow. I imagine among their elderly population, many of them have farmed or gardened. They have kitchens. Many of the congregations have kitchens in the basement, some of which aren't even used anymore.
And they have an organizational structure.
Right.
And they have a history of in many cases, certainly in the Reformed Jewish movement, of having robust social justice programs. So they have the organization and the history, the precedent for doing this kind of work. And as you and I have talked about before, especially in the older neighborhoods, But even up into the mid-1900s, the land use model for a house of worship is a building sitting in a sea of lawn. Mm-hmm. That's just simply the typology. And those lawns are unproductive. They require mowing, watering,
and
fertilizing.
Chemical inputs that are unnecessary and sometimes harmful.
So oddly enough, when you replace that lawn with food production, you also often are eliminating that cost to the congregation of having to take care of those lawns.
So I want to put out a message right now, because I know, because I talk to people about this, a number of people who listen to the show either do it on the way to services on Sunday or on the way back from services, and they catch 15 minutes here, 10 minutes there, and that's great. I don't have a problem with that. If they're listening right now, what I want to say is, this is something you need to bring up at your congregation. If it's never occurred to you before, this is the year. This is January. Now's the time to talk. And it doesn't have to be huge to start. See what you can do. I mean, you have taught folks, Robert, at other congregations how to do this with varying degrees of success. And sometimes it works and sometimes it's not as great. But it's not that hard to rip
Correct.
Up the lawn and put some food in and get people interested in it.
But it requires thinking anew about land use, for starters. And I caught the last bit of the first hour of your show and this conversation about climate change. And in order to affect real change, we need to think about many things in an entirely different way than we have in the past. If we want to rethink our food system, and we want to rethink our land use model, and that's really what we're trying to do. As I said, growing the food that we have in some ways is not all that much, but what it does demonstrate is the potential. And so what we're trying to do is set up a replicable model that people can follow.
You say it's not all that much, but imagine if all of
right.
the congregations did
That's
this.
The key, is to replicate the model. And the story that I think your listeners should know about is a story that I have told you before. 2 years ago, a woman in Northwest Indiana was listening to your show when I was on. She heard about the Martin Luther King weekend and about our food production. they replicated the program, started growing food at their church in Cedar Lake, Indiana. 2 years later, they've delivered over 3,000 pounds of food to those in need. So again, it's this replicable model that through your show and your efforts, she became aware of and really required no work on our part except getting the word out. It is a very reachable goal.
It is. Some people, as in when they start gardening personally in their own yards, are a little daunted by the idea, especially if it's part of the community, it's part of the church, it's part of that congregation, and I think they feel the responsibility to do it perfectly. Well, you don't have to be perfect. That's where you start. And anybody who grows crops, and Sarah and I know this because we've worked in a number of community gardens, there are crop failures. Yeah, I don't think you've ever had one, Robert, but I can't imagine you having. You wouldn't allow it in your garden.
The rate of success is high, and the downside is not very far down. You may lose your summer squash to squash borer. So what? Then yeah. You don't plant zucchini the next year.
Well, no, you plant it after July 4th.
Maybe.
That's the tip. No, that's the tip. That's how you do it because it's the life cycle of the squash borer is past that part of it, right. The larval stage, and then you plant it then. So you don't get squash in July. Yeah. You get it in August.
Yeah.
So there you go. But you're right. The downside is very small.
And right. And the rate of success is quite high. I mean, it's start with radishes. You'll feel as if you're an absolute genius.
You got you'll appreciate this because coming up in the show, I've got a commercial about radishes,
yeah.
And a really good variety. So
it's a quick and early victory.
Yeah,
propel you.
Now I'm not a fan of radishes. I have to. That being said,
yes, but they're wonderfully photogenic and they're.
But you know,
and
so
you have a product in 3 weeks.
Yes, and they make you and give you great confidence.
And that's the other thing. If you screw it up the first time, if it only takes 3 weeks, and bam, you just throw another batch in there. And the secret. My secret is throw in as many seeds as you can fit, you know, and you're going to get enough.
Yes, they'll grow in spite of you.
They really, they probably will. That is Robert Neville. He is the president of KAM, Isaiah Israel Congregation on Chicago's South Side. That's a new office for you, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, it's I could say that no good deed goes unpunished, I explained my arrival at that position as a demonstration of the agrarian roots of our Judaism, and that the training for that office at our congregation it goes through the farm. And so after you've learned how to till and
at least from now on, right?
Yes, that's the
that will be your legacy.
That's
as
the
president?
Joke. That's the joke down on the South Side. If you want to become the president of the congregation, you have to know how to grow food. Now, you know.
It's not a bad qualification, if you ask me.
Rather odd in some ways. But
you know, given you're saying that rather tongue in cheek. I don't think it should be tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
I think it should be. Really part of the deal.
Well, I think I appreciate that, Mike. And I think that what we're trying to demonstrate is that houses of worship, as I say, have a history of doing social justice work and progressive work. But what we're trying to demonstrate is that work, along with what is typically taught inside houses of worship, love thy neighbor, love the stranger, welcome the stranger, love thy neighbor, do good works, repair the world, that sort of thing, actually can be done outside the walls of the congregation and done and actually done rather than just talked about and happens not just when you're inside the house of worship, but when you're outside as well. And in some ways, we have inverted our synagogue and that what we talk about on the inside, we actually do on the outside the walls. And so the message is that to affect real change, the potential to affect real change by actually practicing what we talk about. And I think whether that's growing food or some other version of it, I think that's the key message, is that it's that the end is not when is not at the end of the service. That's where you, that's where you in essence get your direction of what you should be doing for the rest of the time.
Well, you're here, of course, to promote the fifth right. annual MLK Food Justice and Sustainability Weekend, and of course, I managed to steer you off course here, but this is all part of the deal.
Yeah,
you know, and we're going to get back to the specifics of the weekend. But you raised a question that you and I have talked about. Also, it's here we are at the beginning of this new year, and you're planning this social justice weekend, and it involves food. How do people access food? How do we help them access food? How do we help them grow their own food? And yet we're at a time when our country has decided in its infinite wisdom it doesn't care about the poor among us, about the neediest among us. And so let's cut back food stamps. And we've even got our Democrats in office who are saying, you know, the Senate passes, we'll do $4 billion in cuts, $4 billion. And their compromise with the Republicans will be, okay, let's make it $9 billion in cuts. Great compromise, dudes. You're an embarrassment to humanity when you do that kind of compromise. We are supposed, and you know this as a member of a congregation, we are supposed to be taking care of the least among us, the poorest among us. So what do? We cut food stamps. We take away job benefits. I was watching The Ed Show the other day, and he put up a graphic, and he said, what does the average person pay in rent? You know, it's like $800-something per month. That's pretty low for a lot of, certainly for people in Chicago. And what do they get in the benefits? Maybe $1,200. So already two-thirds of it has gone to your rent. And we haven't even started on heat or food or clothing. And we're having this argument
over and over.
And we have a military that is the largest military in the history of the planet. And the only reason we came to the table this January to get rid of the or at least abate the sequester was because people didn't want to cut back the military. But we can't find people. We can't find the money to feed our own people. You people in Congress, you're embarrassing. You shame yourselves by doing this, because look at what Robert Neville's doing on the south side of Chicago. And I'm sorry, it kind of hit me, Robert, that this is the reality of our country right now. And yet there are people like you, and there are people like Sarah, and there are people like Rob Carthol and who are out there trying to teach people how to garden, how to feed themselves. But that's not the end of it. I mean, you can't do that and pay for your rent at the same time.
It's going to require participation by all parties, but it seems as though at this moment, the big business and the government are finding themselves not in the position, for whatever reason, to lead here.
No, I think that's a really good way of putting it. They do not lead,
and so. I could say rushing in to fill the void, but it is houses of worship are in a position to lead, to set examples, and to carry on the work. And hopefully what we like to think of at our congregation is be a light unto the nation. We will continue to do what we do, and hopefully eventually big government and big business will join us in this effort. And I think that it strengthens one's hand when they actually are affecting real change, and then go and ask government or big business to lend a hand.
That's a really good point.
But rather than just wag our fingers or write letters, which can be very important, to go out and grow the food and to say, well, we have grown X amount of food. Can you help us grow 2X? That is, I think, it puts one in a more powerful position. But until the day when big government and big business finds that they are in a position to lead in this way, then we just simply will have to do it. And we will continue to do it when they are in a position to lead. But until they are, it's all the more important for us to lead in this arena.
And you are. Indeed. That, again, Robert Neville from KAM Isaiah Israel. If you have a question or a comment, 773-763-9278. We're going to get into the specifics of day two.
Yes.
We've gotten as far as day one. I know, that's me.
No,
but we will do that after I take care of some business. One of the parts of business is a tip from the Care of Trees. Choosing a tree for your property is part art and part science. And we're going to be talking about trees in just a second with Robert Neville. Specific kinds of trees. Anyway, city trees have to tolerate some tough conditions, including wintertime road salt spray. Just think about what your trees experienced this week and what will happen when all of that road and sidewalk salt penetrates into the soil. It ain't pretty. In addition, roots have a hard time penetrating Chicago area soil, which is typically clayey with rocks and rubble mixed in. Chicago area soil also tends to be alkaline, which means it has a high pH, making it hard for some trees like pin oak and red maple, which everybody wants. Everybody wants the pin oak and the red maple, but they can't extract the essential nutrients they need. Meanwhile, asphalt streets and parking lots soak up heat, creating urban heat islands that put additional stress on trees in summer. The Care of Trees can help you make the right decisions about choosing a tree for your property. Call 800-508-9466 for a free consultation. 800-508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
If you've ever filed a lawsuit, you know that it can be stressful, even traumatic. And if you've been exposed to asbestos, silica dust, or other lung toxins, you're going to need a law firm that can guide you through the legal maze efficiently and effectively. The attorneys of Penn Rakowski are exactly who you're looking for. They view each client and their needs as unique. They're focused on one thing and one thing only, lung disease. And they're based right here in Illinois and Wisconsin. The lawyers at Penn Rakowski have been representing individuals suffering from lung disease and their families for a combined 35 years. And because they're local, they can come to you. They've successfully represented asbestos workers, electricians, carpenters, machinists, and others throughout both states. Contact Penn Rakowski at dustlaw.com or call them toll-free at 888-LUNG-LAW. That's 888-586-4529. Penn Rakowski, local, committed, caring.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I'm very pleased to have in the studio Robert Neville, president of KAM Isaiah Israel. Of course, KAM is presenting its fifth annual MLK Food Justice and Sustainability Weekend. Robert, we've got a quick call, so I'm going to go to that. Bernie, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to comment. Do you think the churches should be having more of a say-so on grinding up all this farmland in Indiana Illinois and the Piatone Airport and stop some of this insanity?
I'm not sure exactly where you're coming from on that.
What I'm saying is all that farmland that's being ground up to for the new expressway.
Well, which is not quite a done deal yet. I mean, there are folks who are still fighting that, and it's a terrible idea, as you know, Bernie.
I mean, even Piatone Airport,
which is another terrible idea.
What I'm asking is you think the church should be kind of commenting on it to?
Here's what I'd say about that, Bernie. And my feeling is, and I think Robert might agree with this, churches have their own properties already. We need to start with them rather than, I mean, they can, folks in congregations can have political opinions and opinions about things happening in the state and so forth and across state lines. Our goal here today on this show and with MLK Food Justice Weekend is to get those congregations to start thinking about this on a really local level, meaning their own property. Let's start there with their own congregations, and then we move forward to that other stuff. I happen to politically agree with you, Bernie. I think both of those things are Piatone and the Ileana Tollway are idiotic ideas. But whether they play out or not, we can still affect change by working with individual congregations. That's what I have to say about that.
I agree with you. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. Let's get to day two here.
Day two.
Of the weekend. And I mentioned when I was talking about the care of trees about you're going to be planting a a forest in the city.
A food forest, right.
Food forest.
Yeah.
What's a food forest, and how are you going to do this?
Well, first of all, I just want to say Saturday in the morning, it starts off at 9:30 with a text study, a Torah study class with Rabbi Frederick Reeves, who's the new rabbi at KM Isaiah Israel, who will do a text study that has to do with food justice and sustainability. And then at 4:30 on Saturday afternoon, from 4:30 to 6:30, with a reception to follow, we will, in fact, do a case study, an urban food forest. And I just before we get into the definition of a food forest, this idea of a community design workshop came about a few years ago in response to the number of wonderful folks around the country who contact us hoping for us to help them design a food-producing garden or microfarm. As you know, our program is entirely volunteer-driven, and many of the urban farmers, certainly all the folks that are going to be teaching on Sunday, January 19th, are so busy during the year growing the food that we don't really have the time to stop and help these people, all these wonderful folks and organizations, design food-producing gardens. And so the goal here on Saturday afternoon at 4:30 is to bring together these wonderful farm managers and experts in laying out urban farms and to show the audience, with audience participation, but to demonstrate to the audience how these folks think about laying out an urban farm, in this case a food forest.
Right, and what's cool about this is you have 2 hours. You have these wonderful people like Aaron Dumbald, Ken Dunn, Seneca Kern, Ilan
Margulies,
Dave Snyder, Michael Thompson, who are all well-known in the horticultural community in Chicago. And for 2 hours, they take a real plot of land and they ask questions and answer questions about how this is going to come together. And you walk away with a concrete plan for this, don't you?
That's correct. And at the end of those 2 hours, with a bit of good fortune, we will have a drawing of a 50,000 square foot food forest located within a mile and a half of KM Isaiah Israel.
You can't give me the exact location, can you?
I cannot yet, but
I did. You didn't give it to me last year either.
I did not.
How come we never break news stories on this show? What's going on here?
You've stumped the band there, Mike.
I know. Because you got to talk to the alderman, and you have to make sure that everything is ready to go before you announce it, and I understand.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah.
But it's a 50,000-square-foot site, and...
50,000 square feet?
Yeah, and...
So you're going to grow fruit trees and shrubs.
Yes, I mean, the ideas that we started with last year in our conversation about the sabbatical year, this idea of sustainability, how do you grow food for those in need, or how do you grow food, period, and make it a sustainable venture? So at one end of the extreme is row cropping that requires a constant attention on the part of the farmers. At the other end of that would be a food forest, a perennial food producing micro farm that requires less involvement on the part of people. Mm-hmm. And so some people think of this as permaculture. Certainly, that's one of the ways to talk about it.
Yeah, that's the phrase that's used. Yeah,
right. And to come out with so the food forest is essentially comprised of food producing trees, nut trees and fruit trees, and then food producing bushes, berry bushes, that sort of thing, and perennial plantings that have a symbiotic relationship, and that it can sustain itself with minimal involvement on the part of farmers. And that's really the goal this year, is to demonstrate how in an urban setting we can design and hopefully implement a food forest so that it can sustain itself and be a source of food and joy for the neighborhood.
I know that one of the people involved, as I mentioned, Dave Snyder of Chicago Rarities Orchard Project, he's trying to start a food forest in Logan Square.
Correct.
Is there a food forest in Chicago extant?
As far as I know, not at this scale. And again, our goal here is to demonstrate the potential of a site. And as you and I talked about yesterday, there are a lot of open sites of this scale in the south side of Chicago. Many of those sites previously had buildings on them. Many of those buildings were collapsed into the foundations and basements.
Which creates real problems for planting.
Well, there is no soil on the site.
No soil. It's just rubble.
Right, right. And so we think of this not as an insurmountable problem, but a design problem that we will try and solve on Saturday, January 18th.
Which is next Saturday. If you want to be part of this. Now, again, what's the cost of doing this? Is it all free?
I'm so glad you brought that up. The entire weekend is free of charge and open to the public. All of what we do in our food justice and sustainability program, we do so that it is free and open to the public.
Are you crazy? what's the matter with you? It's a gold mine. This is a chance to make some real bucks.
Yeah, I think that's.
I sound like Daffy Duck, don't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, sort of.
It's mine. It's mine. All mine.
It is part of building a stronger community. And so the entire weekend is free of charge and open to the public. And that includes a reception following the design session on Saturday afternoon. So at 6:30, there will be a reception. And then Sunday.
19 different workshops, right. 19, including our very own.
Sarah
Batka.
Absolutely.
What are you going to do there, Sarah, on Sunday?
I'm going to provide information where we can find resources, information, best practices, how to grow in the urban environment.
And, of course, relying on Illinois.
University of Illinois Extension.
But, you know, that's not a bad thing. And we talked about it earlier in the show with the folks from the Wisconsin Gardener, is that they go to Wisconsin Extension. Why not go to Illinois Extension? They have the best information.
Absolutely.
And Sarah has that information you need, and so you might want to show up at her workshop so you can know. See, the point is, what Sarah tells you, she doesn't tell you how to do it. She tells you where to get the information.
Right. So very important.
Yeah.
So very, very important.
And I see Mark Moxley from Lake Street Supply. What a wonderful guy.
Yep.
And their products are their soil and brick and pavers and everything they do, and mulch. on Lake Street in Chicago. Let's give them a plug as well. I see Peter Zilkenko and yes. Pat Lixon from Unscrew You, bringing people back to baking bread.
Right. There are several cooking demonstrations. So you can come on Sunday. We start at 11 o'clock on Sunday, and you can come on Sunday and simply take a course throughout the day on cooking. Or you can come if your interest is more social justice. You can spend the day in a social justice tract. Or if you are an urban Aggie, if you want to improve your skills as a grower, there are workshops throughout the day on urban ag.
There's one on Illinois fruit-bearing bushes and trees.
Correct.
Right in line with what you're doing on Saturday.
Absolutely. There are several workshops on permaculture, perennial planting. The big problem on Sunday, and I will tell you this, is watching folks walk around the building with the program in hand, trying to decide just which of the four or five workshops each hour they're going to go to. And it is this really fancy problem to have. And then at noon, we put out a lunch for all those assembled. That is one of my favorite scenes of the year, is to see a couple of hundred people there for lunch, enjoying networking, conversation, good food, and the excitement of what class they'll be taking next. I would encourage your audience to go to www.kamii.org/MLK and pre-register. Again, there is no charge.
Now, you know this is up on my website. Okay. It's already there. Okay. Mike Novak. MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show.
Great.
But and just look for the 5th annual MLK Food Justice and Sustainability Weekend in bold. Click on it, and it takes you to kamii.org/MLK.
Yeah, we just want to make sure that we have enough food for everyone, mm-hmm. which I think we will. And I know we will. And we want to make sure that if there is a workshop that you are really interested in attending, that there is room in that workshop for you, because I will tell you that many of these workshops fill up.
All right. So. Well, listen, always a pleasure having you here. I need to get Dr. Miller on because we have EAB information. Again, go to MikeNovak.net. This week's show, all of the information is there. Show up next week, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. It's going to be fabulous.
Mike, thank you very much for being the strong supporter that you are for our program and for what you do for this community.
And I will see you next Friday evening.
Right.
Have you started thinking spring seeds yet? If so, you should have a D. Landreth Seed Company catalog, which costs only $5. But even if you don't, you can go online to their website, LandrethSeeds.com, or to their Facebook page, Landreth Seed Co., and find great ideas like arugula, one of the best plants to start from seed during early spring or late winter or late summer to early fall. Or you could get Violet Queen Zinnia. Zinnias are native to Mexico and parts of Central America and were first offered for sale as seed in 1798 by the D. Landreth Seed Company. Or how about a very cool edible, the watermelon radish? I was talking to Robert about radishes. Here's the deal on the watermelon radish, or sometimes called the red meat radish, is the most beautiful radish you will ever grow. It's a large turnip-rooted radish with bright green shoulders, a white turnip-shaped ball, and a beautiful watermelon red center. This radish is milder and sweeter than most varieties, and it loves the cold. Planted in early spring or in midsummer for a late fall or early winter harvest. And there's plenty more. Go to LandrethSeeds.com or their Facebook page, Landreth Seed Co., or call 800-654-2407. 800-654-2407. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish Chicago's only local magazine dedicated to healthy and sustainable living. Natural Awakenings is available monthly, and we provide the latest news and trends about healthful living, including alternative and complementary medicine, fitness, good food and drink, healthy kids and families, and even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings also talks about local sustainability, gardening and environment, energy conservation, and green living. We feature local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that each month you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a service in your neighborhood, something that makes your life better.
Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
And after 3 days of drinking with Larry Love, I just get an inkling to go on home. So I'm walking down Cold Harbor Lane, head hung low, 3 or 4.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show. I was just talking to Robert as he walked out. He's showing me the diagram for the spot that's going to have the food forest, which is a really kind of a cool idea. So, it's time to go to the phone line and bring in Dr. Frederick Miller from Joliet Junior College. Fred, how are you?
Good morning.
Is it all right if I call you Fred? What do you like being called?
Fred or Frederick is fine, either one.
Okay. I was going to try Dr. Miller, but I got a feeling you do.
We can go informal, Fred or Frederick.
Okay,
fine.
Great. Fred is an entomologist. You do a lot of different things. You teach at Joliet Junior College. You are the guy, and I've mentioned it before when you were on the program last. You taught the entomology course when I was studying to be a master gardener. So,
when you're still talking to me, that's
You know what? And I told you on the air last time, the one thing I stole from you, I stole from you a great line that I use in all my garden talks, and it's about bugs in the garden. And the line you used was, when it comes to bugs, people want to know two things. One, now how did it go? Now I'm not going to get it right. I know. What is it?
And
how do I kill it? And they usually skip the first question.
Exactly. Get right to the killing part.
Let's get to the killing part. And so that goes along with emerald ash borer, because this week I'm sure you saw the articles out there. I've got some of them posted on my website. The headlines read like this: cold weather could limit ash borer threat. The upside of the bitter cold: it kills bugs that kills trees. Extreme cold may wipe out high percentage emerald ash borer larvae. And all I could think of was, maybe let me talk to an entomologist and see what he has to say. So what do you have to say?
Well, if you're living up in International Falls or on the Canadian Minnesota Wisconsin border, upper UP of Michigan, yes, that might be true. But you and I talked on the phone the other day, it's a lot of it has to do with duration of cold, and of course we didn't get nearly the cold weather that they got up there. They had temperatures, the minus 30s, minus 40s. And just for folks listening, I'll be talking in terms of Fahrenheit, not centigrade. Sometimes it gets a little confusing. But
For our Canadian listeners.
Well, yes, exactly. So here, yes, we had a couple of days in there, pretty nasty weather, Monday and Tuesday of this last week. But really, I don't feel like it was long enough to get the job done. We hit some temperatures, down overnight in the mid-teens, I think, for overnight lows. But we would have needed that for probably at least a week to 10 days to really see some significant kill. Some of the numbers they give out of the work they did up in Minnesota stated that you'd have to have temperatures down in the minus teens to get, around 34%. Kill rate. And of course, the other thing here with this insect, which gives it an advantage in any wood boring insect like emerald ash borer, Asian longhorn beetle, any of these, that they're under, some bark. And so that provides insulation. And everything I've read in the past and recently indicates that you gain a couple of degrees Fahrenheit, sometimes as much as 3 or 4 degrees Fahrenheit in warmth under that tree bark. So you add that into the mix, and that puts you back up around minus 10, you know, if you used our overnight temperatures. So I know some of your folks may remember back in the early 80s, and you and I talked about this. You know, we had a couple of winters in there in the early to mid-80s that were pretty brutal. And this last week, Monday and Tuesday, just kind of give it some comparison, we had that on a consistent basis for about 4 or 5 weeks. And one of the insects I worked on, it actually overwinters on the bark, outside the bark. We saw 100% mortality of that insect after about 7 to 10 days. So that's kind of what I'm using as a gauge. Yes, insects are prepared to withstand very cold temperatures. Some of them have ability to produce chemicals in their body that are very closely related to what we put in our cars, ethylene glycol, which is antifreeze, that help them cool down some as low as 20, 25 below zero Fahrenheit before they actually freeze. Now, if they do freeze, then that's pretty much it. They're dead at that point. But they are well prepared for this, and so I think most of our insects, you know, in this part of the country at this point can take quite a bit of punishment. Now, I think this year got some attention because we haven't had, you know, really this severe cold for quite a few years. And so there was something unusual and kind of new to folks. But
And of course, the Emerald Ash Borer infestation has been going on for, what, 15 years or so?
Right. And that's another very good point. I was reading some other correspondence on that, and they were saying, well, yes, we had some pretty cold temperatures back, you know, in the mid-2000s here, even in Illinois, but that didn't seem to really make a bit much of an impact on its survival. So you take an insect that's used to being over in parts of Korea, northern China, places like that where it gets at least as cold as it does here, sometimes even colder. And if you look at Beijing, China, latitude-wise, it's up there around Minneapolis and those areas. So this is an insect that's pretty cold hardy. Now, the other thing they found, which was interesting too, is that the ability of the insect to supercool will vary from year to year. Some years they can go colder than others. And part of that has to do with, you know, the previous growing season and their nutritional levels and all that. But they can still get down there, you know, pretty cold temperatures. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, minus 20 degrees gets a certain percentage of them, we're saying constant, you know, very consistent temperatures in there, not where you hit 25 below overnight and it warms up to, you know, 10 above the next day and this kind of stuff. So it has to be very prolonged, consistent cold, just like you see with anything. You know, your pipes will freeze if it stays cold enough long enough, but yeah, over 2 nights, you know, it doesn't always do that. So those are the kinds of things you have to look at. It's a combination.
Well, and so the breathless excitement with which some of those headlines were written might have been a little premature.
Well, I think for us, yes. Now, I can't speak for northern Minnesota and all across there. I think it's very plausible up there if they had. And they've had longer periods of cold than we've had comparatively. So yeah, it very well may hold up there. But, no, I think here we need to be prepared for another year of, you know, of intense EAB and, you know, take precautions or do whatever we need to in terms of management to, manage for that.
But, and it's not time to plant more ash trees, I would assume.
No. We're a long way from that. you can't count on winter. Winter's too unpredictable.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be different if we were in a climate where it was very constant and we knew every year we were going to be hitting those kind of temperatures, but it's too sporadic. And, of course, if you throw in the whole thoughts on global warming and all that, that would even work against you there. So
I have about a minute and a half. What other insects do you think are likely to take a hit? What do you think we're going to see in the spring?
Well, I think things will be fairly normal. Now, it was kind of interesting in the fall when we didn't have much snow cover and we had fairly cold temperatures. I thought we might see a drop off, you know, in some of our soil insects that overwinter in the soil, like grubs and some other insects. But with the snow cover that we had, that provided a lot of insulation. And so I think, I mean, I've got green grass under the snow. I was digging out my downspouts, you know, the other day to allow for this thaw, and there's green grass under the snow. So it's not like what you saw on TV with the Green Bay Packer game, you know, where they turned right brown. So I think that, unless we get another really severe cold spell with dying snow cover, I think most insects are going to probably do all right. So I think it'll be a pretty typical winter or typical summer next year. Part of it will be how we come out of the winter in terms of how long it takes to warm up in the spring and all that. That may delay some of the development time on some insects. But otherwise, I think we'll need to be prepared for a more of a typical summer, at least at this time. Well, unless we get a late spring freeze like we've had in the past.
And that's the thing. We never know exactly what's going to happen. For the moment, things have gone more or less back to normal, but who's to say what will happen later on?
I always look at the winter as kind of a big black box. We go into it in fall, and we don't know what's going to come out on the other end in spring. And that's why this whole winter thing and cold temperatures and all that is a very, to me, a very fascinating area, but also very critical in terms of being able to kind of get a handle, like you've just asked, what can we expect the following spring and summer? So,
well, that's Dr. Frederick Miller, professor in the Department of Agriculture and Horticultural Sciences, Joliet Junior College. Always a pleasure talking to you. We will, we're going to have to do it again soon because I know you've still got those ag projects you're working on, and we'll do a follow-up on that.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Have a great Sunday.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That wraps it up. I know very quickly, Lisa, we were talking about that. We don't have time to talk about the West Virginia spill.
Well, it's not going away soon, so maybe we can talk about it next week.
Question is, why has it taken so long for them to even figure out what the heck they spilled, you know? But, okay. Anyway, coming up next, Ouch Chicago, their very second program. Right after the Mike Novak Show. And until next week, everybody, you all said go green or
go home.
I like the way you guys do that.